When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I love the fact that the film is not without risk, and I think that that's really good in terms of it being a film for kids and adults. And I think this is a really important lesson for children, which is that yeah, you should try to challenge like why things scare you, and yes, you should confront your fears
and your parents,
yeah, but that's not always gonna go as well as you hope. There are gonna be sad things, there's gonna be fighting, and sometimes you're gonna get hurt. And I love the fact that we get to the end of the film and Hiccup has lost something as well as Toothless.
Yeah.
And the film doesn't shy away from that. They're like, no, like, he's still Hiccup. And this is a war and it's dangerous and it's scary.
Hello, film fans. Joining Flixwatcher today, we have Ella.
Hello.
Becky.
Hiya.
And Kobe.
Hi.
Waving there. Thanks for that one. And we're here to review How to Train Your Dragon.
Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher.
Hello, film fans. Welcome to this episode of Flixwatcher. In the studio today, we have Ella and Becky. If you would like to say hello and introduce yourself to the listeners, please.
Hello, my name is Ella Watts. I am a podcast person, specifically a drama podcast person. So I work on a sci-fi drama called The Orphans, but I also work for BBC Studios as a podcast producer and in drama commissioning for BBC Sounds. In addition to that, I generally am friends with people who make drama and occasionally turn up on their sets to be very useful and definitely not just fangirl in the corner.
There's Ella again.
This time I came to fangirl on a non-fiction podcast. And I'm really excited for us to talk about my favourite film.
I think you've just given away a few of the spoilers for the scores there.
Yeah. But yeah.
Becky, who are you?
Hi, I'm Becky Brynoff. I guess you could call me a kind of a story person. I'm a charity person. So story-wise, I work as a script consultant on the side, and my podcast, And Then What, is all about stories. We're on a little hiatus at the moment because my co-host Amy Jones has just had a little baby. So that's lovely. And then I work for a homeless charity called Shelter. So that's, I wouldn't call that fun, but it's work. So.
Important work.
Stuff that needs yeah. doing. But yes, that's me. And I'm also very excited to talk about Ella's favourite film.
But you both work in scripted. Well, you're a script consultant?
Yeah, so I take people's kind of, you know when you've been staring at a piece of your own work for such a long time and you cannot see the wood for the trees, and then I swoop in and get my red pen out and be like, don't worry, this is the idea that you've been looking at all along.
Do you ever just go, here's a metal bin? Here's some lighter fluid.
Give them back like a little ashes, bit off the top. The first line was great.
Yeah, the title wasn't that shit.
Oh.
Start again.
Yeah, there's only one time I've refused to work on a script because it was just awful. But it was more because it was incredibly offensive. And I was like, I have better things I can do with my time. But there has only been one script where I've kind of had to be very delicate in my feedback. Lots of shit sandwiches like that. But yeah. Otherwise, generally quite good.
I've come across so many bad scripts. I think like up there for my bad scripts are like an android who's an assassin, but who can get pregnant, which reminds us that she's a woman. She has a fully functioning womb, even though she's a robot, which she explains to us. She also tells us she's an erotic dental assistant.
Oh my God, okay. There is a universe in which this film is my favourite film.
It's not this one, trust me.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, with the audio dramas, is there kind of some script editing process? Is there some script, like, refining?
Of course, yeah. It depends, obviously, on the production. I mean, just like all podcasting, some people are just doing it from their bedroom and all the editing that they'll do is their editing of themselves.
Sure.
Other people are going to be in bigger teams and are going to do more script editing. So, for example, with a show like Wooden Overcoats, they occasionally have guest writers on. And if they have a guest writer on, then David K. Barnes will kind of go through and script edit and they might, you know, pass a couple of eyes over it. And then, obviously, if you're going to sort of BBC scripts, then they're going to go past a few eyes and through a few hands before they get recorded.
Sure. Well, we're here talking about your film, your choice today, Ella. Or as you said, your favourite film ever.
Yes.
I've never seen a bigger, glee. More gigglier
so
smile.
Exciting.
I know, yeah. What's your film called?
Okay. We're going to talk about How to Train Your Dragon. Which is the best.
So tell us why you chose it, apart from the fact it's your favourite film, and give us a 1 minute synopsis. Time starts now.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so I actually wrote something down in the hope that I wouldn't get too confused.
This is eating to your time.
Oh, no, okay. How to Train Your Dragon is an animated kids film about a boy called Hiccup who lives on an island called Berk. It's about Vikings and dragons, daring heroics, and radical kindness. It's got a fantastic score and is beautifully designed, inspired by a range of Norse and Anglo-Saxon aesthetics. Whilst it's far from historically accurate, it captures that fantasy Viking vibe. But unlike what you might imagine from a Viking film, How to Train Your Dragon is, in my opinion, a story about compassion, communication, discovery, and subverting toxic masculinity. It's about learning to live with the things that scare us, not trying to destroy them, even if the things we fear are less tangible than dragons. Things like loss and family and ignorance. How to Train Your Dragon teaches us to love the things we can't control and learn from them.
Oh, wow.
That's very lovely. Yes.
So why did you choose it?
I chose it like for all of those reasons. I chose it because I put it on and every single time I put it on now, every 2 minutes, I'm nearly welling up for one reason or another. I really do think it's about kindness and I think it's about healing and I think it's about learning and embracing your fears and your pain. And I just think it's such a warm and loving film and I love the score so much.
Yeah.
And I love the design and I love Toothless and I love Hiccup and I love the relationships between them all. And I don't know if any of you have read the book that this is based on.
No.
I haven't, no.
So I did, because when that book came out, I was a little bit too old for it. I think I was like 13, 14.
Did you see this before the film came out or
I read the book before the film came
out. Okay, cool.
Oh yeah. Proper hipster when it comes to change. I was quite disappointed by the book, because the book is basically Horrid Henry, but with Vikings and dragons.
Right.
And I'm not saying that that's bad, but 14-year-old me, like I said, I was a bit old for it, and I was expecting something a little bit more exciting, and instead it was just like, what if these nasty boys occasionally did gross things? And I was like, okay, cool. I mean, it's not really.
Plenty of books about that.
Right? Yeah. And then I saw this film, and I was having a really hard time imagining like what it would be like, and went to see it and just was so, I am so in love with this story. This story is just, there's so many beats of it that I think are so lovely. There are so many montages. I think it's so perfect to be told as a film. Like, there are so many beautiful visual sequences that I think work so much better than they could in for example, prose or even audio. And I don't often say that I think things work better outside of audio. And yeah, it just, for me, it's just, yeah, it's just, it's safe and it's warm and it reminds me to be brave and it reminds me to be kind.
I think one thing you said there in your lovely intro, it's probably the best we've ever had. I'm sorry.
Very good.
Was the piece of acceptance.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing that's like super important in this time, like learning to work with the things that you fear. And I think that cuts across a lot of things in a way that I hadn't really thought about. And you just, I think you so eloquently put it there. And I think it's such a nice theme throughout this film and going through the rest of the films as well. It's like, you fear these dragons, but what if actually they could be your friends? Maybe there's a reason behind this and you just get to know them, one of them. And you can embrace everyone and everyone can live together. Helen, what were your thoughts?
So I watch this purely because Kobe has mentioned this more than once.
So what happened? Wasn't it? It was Kira Baxendale came on here and chose B-movie.
Oh yeah, we were talking about DreamWorks
movies. And we were like, yeah, I said, there are good DreamWorks films, How to Train Your Dragon, for example. And you hadn't seen it. And I said, well, it's on Netflix. Go and watch it. And you did.
I did.
Yeah. And
I feel really bad. I do not love it on the level that you love it on. But it is all of those things. And it came out 2010. So it was probably playing against what was kind of the in joke adult humor kind of Shrekness that was around, and just when children's films stopped being kind of children's films and they were kind of spoofs on existing films or kind of had terrible adult films but kind of sandwiched into an animation and stuff. So I think it's really lovely, and like the animation is the best DreamWorks animation, I think.
Becky?
Yeah, pretty much agree. This came into my life through a friend called Ash, who I used to do another film podcast with called Flick Talkers years and years and years ago. And he said to me, oh, this and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs are just a million times better than they have any right to be. You have to watch them. And I did, and I've gone on to recommend How to Train Your Dragon to so many people, and now I've got so many of my friends are having little babies now, and I'm so excited to when the kids grow old enough so that I can say, hey, it's a rainy day, let's watch this film, I think you'll really like it, and they will love it, obviously, because it does, it teaches such great lessons. And whenever I watch it, which has been, and I've lost count of how many times I've watched this film now, because it's such a good comfort watch, you can just stick it on even if you're not paying full attention. When it comes to that, the test drive sequence with the incredible score, it's John Powell.
Yeah.
It was, the sequence when he first time takes the cheat sheet, takes Toothless out for a flight. I stop everything I'm doing to watch that sequence every single time. And I can't, in spite of myself, I can't help but basically do what Ella's been doing this entire time. It's like clutching my fists to my chest and just, I'm just like full of glee, like, because you're holding your breath the entire time watching that. I was saying before we started recording, I would love to watch this on a big screen with a live orchestra. So I think you'd get the entire experience. But yeah, just all the lessons that you learn about, learning to understand the things that you're afraid of and conquering your fears and just being nice to each other. And yes, very much the point about like overcoming this toxic masculinity, because they really set that up in the start of the film. These are big brutish Scottish men, and then you've got little Hiccup just like we can't really talk about the other films, can we?
No.
Okay, anyway, it's great.
We there's so many things I love about this film, and the score is one of them. And I put a post on Facebook a while ago saying, asking for film scores that are great to work to, and this is one of the ones I do come back to. All of the How to Train Your Dragon films, John Powell's score is like amazing. It's not just the best looking DreamWorks film, I think it's one of the best looking animations. Roger Deakins was a cinematographer advisory on this, so he was like,
really?
this is how it looks. And when you see that, it's when you think about some of the background shots and how it kind of all plays together, you're just like, well, that's right. Roger Deakins was behind this. He knows how to set up things. I missed this in the cinema because it was a DreamWorks film, and I was like, it's gonna be a bit wanky, isn't it?
I did exactly the same, and completely missed it, because for the same reason I thought it was going to be like, up its own ass, sort of Shrek-y like kind of film.
And then I saw it on the plane and I was just like, oh, fuck. This is really good.
Yeah.
And then I was so excited to see the second and third ones when they came out. I haven't seen this on a big screen yet. And I mean, watching it again, I was like, shit, I need to watch this on a big screen. I don't think the character animation stands out as well as the rest of the kind of background stuff compared to the second and third one, but I think like Toothless as an animated character, and how he I don't know, is Toothless a he, is it declared?
He's a he.
How Toothless looks and plays and everything like that is
so
amazing.
Much character in the animation.
It's absolutely
that's
outstanding.
What the impressive thing about it.
And what you said, Hannah, about the how cartoons used to play on like two levels, like one joke for the adults, one joke for the kids. This doesn't really do that. It's just like the same story for both people, and you can take so much from both way. My kind of nephews-in-law, I guess, in Australia, and niece-in-law, they really, really loved this. And I remember speaking to my brother-in-law about the film, and he said he gave their youngest son, Sam, a toy of Toothless, and he was like playing along with it. And then suddenly, like, he was like, no, don't like this one. And it's because it was the Toothless from the start of the film. He had both of his tail parts together, whereas his brother had the Toothless with the kind of red kind of partition. Cool. And at, like 3 years old, he noticed that difference, and he's like, "No, I want the proper Toothless that he plays around with." So it was that kind of thing that really, like, it was like, shit, this does resonate through a lot of different people, and really cuts to the core. So yeah, I'm a big fan of this film. Anything else? Cuts to the core?
No. No, I mean, I kind of made some notes on, like,
sure,
my favorite.
Yes, please do.
I mean, but specifically with the score, like, and in terms of my favorite sequences, I think my personal favorite moments are the first time that Hiccup and Toothless meet, after Hiccup is down Toothless, and the tension in that whole scene. The first Toothless montage when Hiccup finds him in the little, like, kind of like valley thing. It's not really valley.
Canyon stuff.
Yeah. And that bit where Toothless, like, draws in the sand.
Yeah.
And then the test flight. And then obviously the big finale. And one of the things that I love about the score and also about the animation and the pacing of the film, and I think is really well demonstrated in that test flight sequence, is the way, like you said, you can't look away. But I think a lot of it is to do with it is pace. So like in that test flight scene, like as soon as you start feeling comfortable, you have the bit where everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
and then you get that catharsis of everything going right again. And I mean, I love that for a number of reasons. One of the reasons is actually, fun fact, I can do an aerobatics display. I was in the RAF reserves.
Oh, holy shit.
I can fly a plane.
Oh my God.
And there is an aerobatic maneuver called a stall turn, which is where you take a plane and you fly it straight up. Now, I don't know if anyone listening knows much about physics, but a plane needs to be flying sort of forwards and not straight up, because it needs the drag against it to keep all of the forces acting on it in motion.
It's aerodynamics, folks.
Yeah. So when you fly straight up, what you do is you stall the plane, and then the plane tumbles. Mm. And what you do in a stall turn, which is an aerobatic maneuver, is you use the flaps on the plane's wings to catch the wind so that you can tumble the right way up, go down, build up speed, and then you're able to kind of kick back into gear. And normally you'd go out into like a loop the loop, or something similar. So for me,
they like literally do that in the sequence. It's incredible.
Yeah.
When his wings come out and you're like, oh my God.
Exactly. And I love it because like watching that bit in the film feels like doing that aerobatic maneuver. And I love it so much. Like it's got that exact feeling, that moment when you just like your stomach goes up out of you and you have that moment. And then you're tumbling and you're tumbling and you're tumbling and then catching that and just getting that thrill. Like I really think that they just got that. And so a lot of the flight sequences, like I can be quite picky about flight sequences in film because also my dad was a pilot, but.
So Harry Potter flight sequences.
Yeah.
Okay. That says it all. Move on.
But yeah, so I love the flying, but I love the music and I love how much is Hiccup choosing to put himself at risk.
Yeah.
And I also love the fact, I mean, and this is kind of segueing, I guess, into something different, but I love the fact that the film is not without risk. And I think that that's really good in terms of it being a film for kids and adults. Mm. And I think this is a really important lesson for children, which is that, yeah, you should try to challenge like why things scare you. And yes, you should confront your fears.
And your parents.
Yeah, yeah. But that's not always going to go as well as you hope. There are going to be sad things. There's going to be fighting. And sometimes you're going to get hurt. And I like the fact, I love the fact that we get to the end of the film and Hiccup has lost something as well as Toothless.
Yeah.
And the film doesn't shy away from that. Mm. And it's not like, oh no, a disabled main character, that can't possibly happen. They're like, no, like he's still Hiccup. Like, and this is a war and it's dangerous and it's scary. Although also, I'm sorry, now I am rambling, but I will say on the note of it being a war, the thing I love is that it's not, I don't think it's too heavy-handed a metaphor. I think that if they'd done that, it could easily have been A, quite offensive, B, quite didactic, and C, quite condescending. And I think that they never go that far. Mm-hmm. But they do have elements of that feeling of war, like the contrast between Hiccup having fun with Toothless and then Stoic and the others coming back from trying to find the nest and they've lost half the crew and the ship is destroyed. Like you suddenly go, oh, shit, right, okay. This is also really scary. This is really serious.
Well, I mean,
serious.
Right at the start, it starts off as a war, as a battle with the dragons. And there's like, oh, there's this one that's on fire. And it's, you know, all this kind of mythology is kind of really, really built up from the start. And you've at the start, you're like, holy shit, they need to really temper down what this potential attack, well, they're not this, this
not gonna have any
real threat.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And when they turn it into like a loving towards at the end, where even Hiccup's dad's got a dragon, and you have the same kind of the monologue's almost like fully reversed, isn't it? We're an island, we're a remote island. We've got the only problem is we've got all these pests, and then at the end they're pets.
Yeah,
and that's such a nice like 100, like full 180 on.
I love a bookend in a film
on the so on the storyline. It's all about Toothless, isn't it? I don't like, to be honest, I don't like the other dragons. I think Toothless is by far and away
it's
like
the best looking dragon.
Yeah,
they've definitely, it's like I think the animation purposefully makes the hidden the most just aesthetically pleasing dragon. Mm. Even the way he moves like a cat.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
it's definitely,
he's just
cat,
yeah, element. You just want to give him a little cuddle.
He is extremely cool, although I do enjoy the other dragon designs and that I like. They do take they make a lot of reference to the original book, like especially stuff like the Zippleback and the Terrible Terror are very, in fact I think the Terrible Terror is the size and shape of the original dragon that Cressida Cowell was imagining for Toothless,
right?
Because he was supposed to be the most useless dragon, but then it turned out he was really smart and smart talking, and he helped Hiccup get out of situations. In this, yeah, like, I mean, I have a cuddly Toothless. and I do think he's, yeah, for sure the coolest. But I like the design. And actually also, so two things. I love the Monstrous Nightmare has this red and black striping.
Is that the one that sets itself on fire?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. There are a lot of little details that reference, obviously, the natural world. Mm. And that's one of them. Like, this is a dangerous thing. This is a poisonous thing. The way that they play with, like, colouring and stuff. I don't really like the design for the Gronkle, which is the big fat one.
Yeah.
That's, like, a little annoying. Although I do like the fact that it has, like, whirring kind of wings. Mm. But... No, I like the Monstrous Nightmare, and I like the Book of Dragons. I like some of the designs that they have for like stuff like the Scaldron, which is the one that fires like boiling water. Listen, I really like this film. But also more generally, another fun fact about me, apparently I'm just talking about myself today. I studied Anglo-Saxon, Norse and Celtic studies, which means I am an expert in early medieval history and Viking Age Scandinavia.
So you can read runes.
I can read some runes.
Were they accurate?
No. Okay.
So sort of like Night Fury and runes. I was like, no, I don't think that's right.
No. It's like when people use Cyrillic really wrong and it's like, guys, no. No, I mean, I'm better at medieval Welsh, but I'm aware of...
Oh my God! It's amazing. That's the best.
Sorry. I just create languages and, yeah.
I feel like if any of my friends listen to this, they're going to be mad at me and they're going to be like, Ella, you were pretending you knew stuff about Norse. I'm like, no, I'm a Celticist, but I am aware of Viking and Scandinavia and I'm better at Anglo-Saxon history, and I really like the design cues that they took from Anglo-Saxon and Norse stuff. So like, for example, there's this gold dragon head in one of the halls that is like very Anglo-Saxon, and I love that. And I love like the way that they kind of mash together more modern things like the dragon pit in the dragon training school with those more traditional kind of things like the round shields and stuff. It's also one of those films, much like A Knight's Tale, where it's terribly, terribly inaccurate and also has moments where it reveals that the filmmakers do know what they're doing and they're choosing not to be accurate.
Like, is this like the horns on their helmets?
Yeah, there are no... Okay, anyone listening to this, please understand, there are no horns on Viking helmets. There are none. It's never been a thing. It's not a thing. It's not a thing. That comes from a runestone which has like a witch who we think used to go into battle with the Vikings because they believed that she would like maybe give them some kind of blessing or good fortune, and she had a big ceremonial headdress with big horns on it. So it's like one thing. Like, just think about the practicalities of it, okay?
Couldn't get through doorways.
It's terrible.
And if you're fighting someone, they can just grab the horns on your head and chop your head off. It's just terrible. The reason the Greeks had like that horse hair, like it was showing off, but also it's much harder to grab that. Like, whereas with the horns, you're just like, well, I've broken your neck now, that was easy. Anyway.
Just in the spirit of talking about ourselves, has my surname set off any...
Yes, I love your surname very much.
It is just for any ancient fans of, I mean, ancient fans, fans young and old, any fans of ancient Norse stuff. My surname is a really, really old Viking name meaning armoured wolf.
Yes.
Which is cool. Definitely don't pronounce it Brynolf outside of these shores. It's like Bjørnolf or something.
Yeah, so like the way it's been anglicised is so that it's OLF and I think it would have been ULF. And also, yeah, instead of it being Bryn, it would be BYRN. So it's the same kind of thing, stem that you're getting in like names like Bryn. It's same kind of thing going on.
Yeah, it's kind of similar because the first set off alarm bells for me when in a film we're not going to talk about. what's the one? Dark Materials, that's it.
Oh!
With Yorick Bjørnesen.
Yeah, Lorik Bjørnesen.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they are in Svalbard.
And I was like, that's familiar. But anyway.
That's all proper. That's proper Nordic, though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's proper Norwegian. Anyway, I think it's about time to head to the scores.
Probably.
Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zoltz-Austwick.
And we are the two hosts of a podcast called
Song by Song,
where we listen every week to a track by the musical artist Tom Waits. You might know him for his gravelly voice. Very nice. His appearance in films, but also his multi-decade spanning career involving blues, jazz, and all sorts of other kinds of experimental music.
So we're basically like a book club for Tom Waits. And if that sounds like your cup of tea, you can find us at songbysongpodcast.com or wherever you get podcasts.
So welcome to the spreadsheet of dreams. FlixWatcher scores are all out of 5. You may have decimal places and we will start with you. I'm really not going to probably be surprised by the answer to this, but Ella, with your recommendability, please.
It would be a 5. For so many reasons. I love the music. I love the aesthetic. I also strongly believe that the fact that this is a kids' film with a disabled protagonist who continues to be disabled throughout the series, and who is a very alternate version of masculinity, who is not big and buff, who doesn't want to kill things, is both lovely and also a really, really good message to anyone I know who has kids. I'd recommend this a million times.
Becky.
Also a 5. I've recommended this to so many people. And yeah, the moment that my friend's kids get old enough to be able to sort of take this in properly outside of like, ooh, cool stuff. They're absolutely getting plonked in front of the TV.
Helen.
I'm going to go a little bit low. A solid 4.5. I know people who refuse to watch any animations. And I also know that there's a lot of people who animations are just not for them. Mm. And I think for me, maybe it's the sort of the fantasy setting didn't quite have the same appeal for me, say, as like Toy Story, which I kind of really like that setting. So I don't think I got as much out of it because it's just not really my thing.
4.5. I'm going to go for 5. Love it. I think it's great.
Fair.
I think I'm glad it's back on Netflix. Repeat viewing score, Ella.
5. I'm going to watch it again this week because I was making notes whilst I was watching it this time. Like I said, every time I watch it, I start welling up at different moments. I feel like I notice something different every time. And the score never gets old. Toothless never gets old. I love going back and seeing him again.
Becky.
Same. For a 5 as well. I've watched this so many times. I could watch it over and over and over and over and over again. It's just wonderful. It's just a good story. It's just a bloody good film. There's nothing really I can pick apart about it.
Helen.
So I watched this probably not so long ago, and then I kind of half rewatched it, sort of had it on in the background as a bit of a refresher. That's probably enough for me.
Definitely recommend you watch the other two.
Yes, well, when they come on Netflix.
They're not on Netflix at the moment, which is, again, I've talked about this before, how irritating that is.
I'm sort of curious to see where it could go, because I was a bit like, okay, kind of wondering what could happen next.
Well, they always think of things.
Okay.
So what was your score, sorry?
A 2.
2. I'm going to go for a 3.5 here. I haven't watched it as many times as you guys, and only because I don't think it's that's simpler drop of the hat rewatch for me, but I'd always be super happy to watch it again, and will do, I'm sure, for eternity. unfortunately taken Helen out of the equation here. What? How does this rank in the trilogy for you?
Number one for me.
I think it's still number one, but the second comes very, very close. Mm. I do really love the second, but I don't think anything quite beats the magic of the first.
I think for me, I do slightly prefer the second one, because I think that was the first one I saw in cinema, and there was some like moments.
Yeah.
So I do definitely recommend.
I kind of
imagine
that maybe they advanced on the animation a bit, and kind
I think
of
the animation
took
looks
that a bit wider and a bit.
I did declare, like, came out of the cinemas like, guys, seriously, get yourself to the fucking cinema and watch How to Train Your Dragon 2, like, now, because it does look a lot better. The third one doesn't look that much better, but the second one I think works better, mm-hmm. From a visuals point of view. But I think there's a lot of touches in the storyline which for me were just like, okay. Small screen score. Ella.
I mean, it's another five. I have a reason for this, because I'm aware that like three of the four of us have said how badly we want to see it in a cinema with an orchestra. So, you know, maybe that counts against its small screen score. But really, I mean, this kind of comes back to the rewatching. But, you know, if I'm sick, if I'm not sick, if I'm tired, if I'm not tired, if I have a choice between this and anything else to put on the TV, I will put this on, like, if it's an option. I think it works really well.
So how many times do you think you guys have watched it?
Oh, God.
So it came out 2010.
So it came out when I was 16.
Right.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm a baby. Yeah, I think I've definitely seen it over 20 times.
I probably more than that, then I reckon. I want to say like 40, maybe?
Holy yeah. shit.
What? A lot. Yeah.
Nice. You must like have to watch it, what, like...
Three times a year?
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, that feels conservative. Yeah.
It's just lovely.
Yeah.
Small screen score, Becky.
I'm gonna disappoint Ella now. I'm going to give it a 2.5 for small screen, because for me, again, I haven't seen it on a big screen. However, it as much as I love it on a small screen and have evidently watched it many, many, many times, I feel like this film is made for the biggest possible screen and, you know, the livest possible orchestra kind of thing. It's something that I think needs to be a 360 sensory experience. And that's something I really want to enjoy one day. If Prince Charles Cinema make it happen, bring in the Royal Philharmonic. I would love to watch that.
I think it'd have to be the Royal Albert Hall.
Yeah,
I
don't think they'd get much of an orchestra.
In Prince Charles, in the pit.
Oh, they give it a bloody good go.
They'll have a man in the kazoo.
I'm just picturing this entire score done on kazoo now. Amazing.
Helen.
I'm going to give it a two. So I did the crime of watching this on my phone because I happened to be traveling and I didn't really get any of the, even though I had headphones in, the score seemed to have washed over me. I can't really remember that much about it. So I don't know whether it was because I was hearing it too much in my ears rather than all around me. I don't think I appreciated the animation for what it was. And then when I kind of rewatched it again on the TV, again, it didn't really grab me as much. So I think had I have watched it on a bigger screen to begin with, it would have had a bit more of an all-encompassing effect for me.
Yeah. And I think I'm going to go for a two as well, I think. I think that's why the second one's my favourite, because I saw that one in the cinema and it was just like, everything, every single thing I wanted from it, like was there. Bombastic soundtrack and amazing visuals and everything like that. I would Prince Charles this, but I think
Royal Albert Hall
with John Powell conducting. Ugh. would be a good, a nice touch.
That is such stuff as dreams are made of. I mean,
I do like that though. We've scored this low. It's very much a big compliment to the film.
Well, this is how some of them work, and that's unfortunately how our scoring system tumbles, isn't it? Mm-hmm. What did I say? Two. Engagement score.
It's a five. But I think engagement and recommendability are the ones that I feel most strongly about. Like, in terms of engagement, this is just such a well-paced story. Mm. It gets fast, it gets slow. Whenever you're starting to think, oh, I'll turn away now, you get like a montage or a favorite moment, or the score changes in a really interesting way, or there's some cool sounds. Things happen that are unexpected. Like when you get to the dragon nest, and there's the moment where you're hearing that weird kind of like almost cicada-like calling, and then suddenly it goes silent. Like I dare you to look away in that moment. Like, you know, so I think, and then there are bits where I want to look away and I can't, like when Toothless saves Hiccup when he's doing the supposed to kill a dragon and he doesn't. And I hate that scene so much every time, like seeing Toothless not realize that he's gonna get grabbed. And yeah, I think I just don't think that there are many moments as a millennial, as a, you know, 25-year-old with her head always in her phone. I find it really hard to look away at any point. So yeah.
So five. A couple of things I think are worth mentioning are, well, I just, would be good to touch upon, are the voice cast.
I was going to mention that.
I don't think they overpower the film, even though they've got, I don't know, like with the Toy Story, you're like, oh, that's Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm. But in this one, there's a decent voice cast behind it. Gerard Butler's probably the biggest name, but Jay Baruchel, I had to really like look out for him in other films to find out which one he is. And he's one of, you know, hangs around with Seth Rogen and those guys. Christopher Mintz, Plas McLovin in thingy, you know, Kirsten Wiig. But those guys, they don't really, it's not their voices. It doesn't match about the voices. And I quite like that, actually. It's the film is bigger than their voices. Mm-hmm. But then...
I couldn't work out whether I thought that was a good thing or whether because they were kind of a little bit non-celebrity, so you couldn't really work them out, that I was a little bit distracted watching it, trying to work out who they were.
Right.
And if I could work, trying to...
Did you work any of them out?
No, I don't think I did. Only because I knew... Or did I? Maybe Gerard Butler a little. I was like, who's the Scottish person? There must be someone in there.
There's a couple of Scottish.
So I found that a little bit distracting for me. So I'm mixed about it. Mixed in that I think it's good that they didn't have like a big name and then it became about that. But then also because of my enjoyment watching it, I was like constantly thinking, who could this be?
So maybe on a rewatch, would you go to IMDb and go, okay, fine.
I'd satisfy myself with knowing who's going to be the voices and be like, oh, I recognise that voice.
I don't think you do though. Like Kirsten Wiig's in it, and you just don't. I struggle to remember which one she is. She's one of the twins. Is she Roughnut or Toughnut? I don't know which one is Roughnut. I don't know which one's Toughnut.
Yeah, actually, I still struggle to get them the right way around. One of them is one of them. Although that's a thing on character design that I do love is the way it does the female characters.
Yeah, that's another thing is like the ancillary, the younger characters will be quite interesting. They'll have like a brief chat on them as well. I didn't really like the love kind of thing with Astrid, is like he's kind of fawning after her.
A little bit disappointing considering how kind of progressive and great everything else was. It's like, don't be the love. Oh, it's interesting. That's not all you have to aspire to, kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gives me two feelings about it. Because, yeah, I do think I adore this film. I adore this film series. I do think Astrid is the most underserved character in the series, and I don't like the way they handle her in the second and third films. Not really. And on character design, I like the fact that Toughnut and Roughnut are basically interchangeable. Yeah. It's not like the girl twin is the really sexy one.
Yeah.
It's like they basically have the same exact clothes, and that's nice. But also an interesting thing about Astrid is from a Norse scholar point of view, she plays the role of the wetting woman, which is interesting and a weird decision. So the wetting is spelled W-H-E-T-T-I-N-G, as in sharpening, like sharpening a sword. Mm-hmm. And what happens in Icelandic sagas is that you always have a female character who's there to be like, nah, go on, you can do it, come on, pick the fight, come on, be the hero. Often the wetting woman is much more dangerous, like, go avenge my brother or you're a coward. But I do think that Astrid is kind of doing that in this film, like especially when
she's kind of goading him, isn't
yeah. Like when in that scene when Toothless and Sturt go away, and then she's talking to Hiccup and she's being like, you know, I want to know what you say right now. And then it's like, you said wouldn't that time instead of couldn't. Like she's very much playing like she's being the wetting woman. Mm. The thing about the wetting woman is that for a female character to exist only to encourage the male character to go be a hero is a thing we're very familiar with. Yeah, and I think that it pulls some stuff back with a certain female character in the second film, who I will not name because you haven't seen it.
and we don't spoil other films.
Mm-mm. Yeah, But I think, yeah, it does some interesting things with female characters in other films in the trilogy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think it's a fair, like, I was a little let down. I'm always a little let down by Astrid. I wish she got to be a bit more badass.
Mm-hmm. Becky, yeah. Engagement score.
While Ella was talking, I increased my score by 1 point.
To what?
It was a 2, now it's a 3. Because I've watched this so many times, I can quite happily just leave it on in the background and go and sure. do other things and know exactly when I need to return for test drive for that sequence and then be completely and fully engaged in that bit. And also similar to you, Helen, as well, like I was a little distracted when I first watched it. I was like, who is that voice? I need to know. And because it's not Amazon Prime, you can't just like hover your cursor over the screen and
the
names
That's the best thing about Amazon
Prime. I really like that, as a
that X-ray thing.
Yeah,
we've not seen it.
You pause it and then it just tells you exactly who all the actors are in that moment.
Yeah.
It's very techy and I quite like it.
I can sense all the Netflix people like, fucking hell. Why didn't we come up with that? No, we can't do because they do already. You twats. And then it ties in directly with IMDb as well because Amazon own IMDb, which is taking over the world.
They're friends. For a profit. And
engagement score.
Oh, have you finished?
Oh yeah, sorry. 3 for me.
I'm going to go for the voices made me kind of stop and have to check that out and but no, I was happily to spend 1 hour 38 minutes with it.
A score of
4.
Sorry,
did I say 4?
I maybe missed that. I'm going to go for a 4.2. I think it's a lovely film, and I don't think I'll watch it. I won't rewatch that often. And that's good in the way that I will forget things that happen. And it's always like, oh yeah, nice. So if I watch, you know, when you just ruin your film sometimes, you know exactly what's going to happen. The next scene, it's not that good. So yeah, I think I'll hopefully keep that engagement score quite high with subsequent watches. Unlike Becky, where you've kind of eroded your engagement score.
You've seen
it too many times.
But Ella talked it back up.
Yeah. And that gives us an overall score of 3.9 1875, and that's basically it's a small screen score.
Yeah, let it down.
We all want to see it in the cinema.
Yeah, I'm very sad that it's not a 4.
Oh, that's so close as well.
You know, it's fine. I'm not sure I'll ever talk to any of you again. But
you tried too hard with the straight 5s. But otherwise, I mean, a recommendability of 4.875 is one of the
pretty strong.
It's pretty strong out of the gate there. But it's just how our scoring system works, Alan, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know it's fine.
You
I've listened.
Bring a less beautiful film to the table. Less bombastic soundtrack. Next time you come on board,
you'll learn.
You'll learn. That'll learn you.
I'll pick something brilliant that you have to watch really small.
Yeah. So let's go to the Twitters. And as always, we do tell people on Twitter before recording to review our film. In this case, we're reviewing How to Train Your Dragon with Gedge Watts and Rabbit in a Hat. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts on air shout out on Flixbutcher. Gedge Watts, do you want to take the first one?
Okay. So the Contrarians at Contrarian Prime say, surprisingly thoughtful. You can say the same of the sequels, only it wasn't a surprise by then. 4 out of 5.
Becky.
The IMDb Journey podcast says, 4 stars, a fun film that adults and children can enjoy alike.
Helen.
Great movie about friendship and how fear is nothing more than a handicap created out of our own ignorance. And did they come with some stars? 3.5.
Ella.
Iron Horse at Iron Horse 341 says, really cool how they don't ignore age in the story. You see the characters grow.
No stars there. This one seems like it's tailor-made for you.
I just noticed. So Ash at Ash Diggs Film says, 5 stars, ask Becky. So Ash is the Ash who recommended this film to me in the first place.
Fantastic. Let's do a quick Pixar versus DreamWorks.
Ooh.
Oh, you've got something prepared there, Ella.
Oh,
okay. Do you want to go first?
I made notes.
Oh, my God.
Okay. So in Kira's B-movie episode, which is not the only episode I've listened to, I was going to say that this whole rating reminded me of Inception, because I also love Inception, but I feel it's another one that's better on the big screen. Anyway, in Kira's episode, she mentioned Prince of Egypt, and she's right. That film is a masterpiece of animation.
And that's traditional animation, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so beautiful, and the music is so beautiful. And they consulted like a number of religious teachers from a number of different religions. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just like, this is going to be the Christian film that does the Christian thing.
Yeah.
They talked to a bunch of different people, and it made it into this really beautiful film. And it is... about Moses, like it obviously is like a theological film, but I think it's really beautiful. And that was DreamWorks. Other DreamWorks films I like include Road to El Dorado, which ends in a polyamorous trio. No one can tell me otherwise. Chicken Run, obviously.
Is that DreamWorks though?
Well, according to the internet, it is.
I'm not classing it as DreamWorks.
It's Aardman Animations.
Aardman,
yeah. Maybe in
they did team up with DreamWorks. So they did like Flushed Away was a DreamWorks, and then they kind of Aardman and DreamWorks kind of went, we don't know what to do with you guys, so you can go
just
you do your own thing
on the subject. Prince of Egypt is on Netflix. Just as a public service announcement.
Oh, that's, it's so good.
I'm adding it to my list on behalf of you and Kira.
Thank you, Helen. Other good DreamWorks films, Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron, is a great film. I love Sinbad. I love Megamind. I really like my Rise of the Guardians, and I really like Kung Fu Panda. However, having gone through that list and then compared it to Pixar, I was like, okay, Pixar does win. but I just want to make a case for DreamWorks isn't terrible. I don't think it's as bad as people think it is, because it's bad films are so bad that people forget that they can do good films. And I think that's a bit unfair. But Pixar definitely wins. I was looking at, like, I only had like cars for Pixar films I don't like, and for DreamWorks films I don't like was like Boss Baby, every Shrek sequel, Over the Hedge, B-Movie, the Madagascar sequels, the Croods, like Trolls.
Yeah. I'm a little bit stung because I used to work at Fox and worked on a lot of DreamWorks films. Yeah, so I'm a little bit yeah, you do have to push quite a lot of stuff that you're not really into. You have to really pretend that you really like it. But no, Trolls, that bloody song by Justin Timberlake haunts me to this day. What another film you mentioned just then? Tell you what, Boss Baby. I saw a really early cut of Boss Baby. The earliest version of that was a really wild, surreal, fun, experimental, like half the animation was done, but you could tell from the storyboarding, and there was like so many homages it did to like old classic cinema, and I was like, this is gonna be amazing. And then it got super watered down, and we're like, oh well, never mind, this is just what we've got now. So it is a massive shame. Yeah, I think Pixar, I'm a Pixar girl. I've got the whole box set at home. It's amazing.
Helen?
No contest, really. Yeah. Pixar have been the best since they started.
Yeah, it's got to be Pixar, but this, I think, ranks higher than most of my Pixar films, I think, is the thing there. Kung Fu Panda's really cool.
It is.
But then I was like, Kung Fu Panda 2? Don't care. I think it's all the sequels as well, and you don't care, but with somehow Pixar managed to go, yeah, I'll watch Toy Story 4.
And you know what I will say? I was talking to a friend about this where, like, the thing about DreamWorks is, okay, yeah, when they flop, they flop. Mm. But I do think, versus Pixar, I always feel like when DreamWorks decides to be a bit daring and a bit challenging, they really go for it. And I think sometimes they're a little bit sharper and a little bit more challenging than I've ever really seen Pixar be.
Yep.
And like whether that's we are going to have an amputee be the protagonist of our series, and no, you don't get to say no to that. Or with Spirit, Sally and the Cimarron, this is going to be a really harrowing criticism of white America. And this is going to be like a serious film about like the genocide of Native American people, and also it's a kids film, promise. I think when DreamWorks decides that they give no fucks, they give no fucks, and I love it. I just wish that they did that more often.
Sells fewer toys though.
Yeah
I know. I just want something to broaden our cultural imagination and make us better to each other and progress society. It's what I want from my art, not plastic.
Can you sign off, guys, by letting us know where we can find you online and say ciao?
So you can find me
and sign off in some Nordic language.
Ooh. Oh my god, amazing.
I'm not sure I can actually do that. I mean, I can give you an old English like saying. Will that work?
Anglo-Saxonish, that'll do.
Okay, cool. So you can find me on the internet on Twitter at GEJWatts, Gedge Watts, or you can follow my podcast, The Orphans, on Twitter at Orphans Audio and also on Instagram. And as a sign off, I will leave you with an old English saying, which is Adha Soferioda, this is Swa May, which means that passed away, so may this. As in, no matter what happens, you'll be okay.
Ah, it is what it is. I like it. And I'm Becky Brynolf. You can find me on Twitter at Rabbit in a Hat, and you can follow my podcast at And Then What Pod. And I guess I'll just sign off with, I don't know, something Scottish, like, all right, see ya, pal.
Hi, bra.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you. You just heard a Stripped Media production.